Welcome to Holistic Trauma Healing, a podcast that empowers you to heal trauma in the same way it has affected you as a whole person. I am Lindsay Lockett, your host. I have discovered a profound path to healing trauma that allows us to move out of the role of victim and into the role of empowered and conscious creator of our best possible reality. I offer hope, healing insights, and practical tips as you get to the root of how trauma has affected every part of your existence and how to weave a new web of life that isn't ruled by the past.
Hello, welcome friends. This is episode number 100. Oh my gosh, that's so crazy to me. It isn't. The first year of the podcast, I managed to get out an average of one episode a week, sometimes more than one episode in a week. And then the second year of the podcast, it went down in frequency. And now we're about to hit the 3-year anniversary of the podcast in October 2023. I started it in October of 2020. So it's taken me 3 years to get 100 episodes, which is an average of like 33 episodes in a year, which I still think is pretty great. I will just be totally, totally honest. As much as I love doing this podcast and I love the interviews, the conversations, I love getting to talk to you. I love that this is so helpful for you. I get so many great reviews on the podcast and what an awesome free resource it is. And believe me, I know it's an awesome free resource. And at the same time, I am still producing this thing on my own. I have not hired anyone to help me edit or write show notes or push the podcast out or help me market it in any way. And I don't receive like ad money because I don't have ads on the podcast. I also don't have sponsors or partners that I work with. And so it really is a labor of love to put this podcast into the world. And I am currently sitting in the space of, do I want to just keep doing it as it flows and as it comes naturally? And if that means I go 2 or 3 months without publishing an episode and then publish 5 in a row, can that be okay? Is that not okay? And yeah, I'm just kind of sitting in that space right now because I do recognize that a resource that is consistent is also really helpful. And so when the podcast, you know, comes out week after week after week, and then for 3 months it doesn't come out, I recognize that that's like not helpful for you, but it's not helpful for me to self-produce this podcast. So if you know of any really good podcast editors and people that I can just send the raw MP4 file to, and they will come up with they will edit my bathroom breaks out and they will come up with show notes and even come up with like videos about it for Instagram or something that I can share in that format. Like that would be awesome. Send me an email, support@lindsaylockett.com. Lindsay is with an EY and not an AY. And that would be really helpful if you have someone you can recommend who's affordable. So welcome to the 100th episode. Holy shit. Here we are. It took us 3 years to get here, but we made it. And I've decided that I'm going to make this episode a Q&A episode. So it'll be just me. And I'm going to be answering some of the questions that I've been getting lately on Instagram, most specifically, but also some questions that I've received from clients and group students. Speaking of group, ever since May of 2023, I have been running a group program called Feel Without Fear. This has consisted of 6 workshops and 6 group coaching calls. We are currently 5 workshops in. We have a group coaching call coming up this coming Tuesday. And then we have one more workshop and one more call, and then the program is over. And it has been marvelous. Just marvelous. The people who signed up for the full thing, the full program, are showing up. They are consistent, committed, curious. They're developing relationships with each other off of the group or outside of the group. They're providing support and co-regulation for each other. It is such a safe, beautiful space. And I am honored to be the person who's facilitating this space. I did not know back in April when I first started talking about Feel Without Fear what exactly the journey was going to look like. In my marketing of Feel Without Fear, I was really clear that it was a program that I was going to be developing as it went. And so the participants were going to be co-creating this program with me. And that has happened. And it's been a beautiful co-creation experience. In fact, last night I taught the fifth workshop, which was all about resiliency and self-responsibility, boundaries, and agency. And it's just such an honor to hold space for people, especially whenever they take off their masks and they're really, really vulnerable. And that's been happening a lot in this group. Of course, I will run it again. I'm going to run it again. I'm going to make some refinements and some tweaks to it. It is much more than a collection of workshops and group calls. There is a community aspect of it that I need to focus more on. I need to create or find some sort of platform for group members to connect outside of the calls, and I would like to do it in cohorts. So this was my first cohort. This was the beta test of Feel Without Fear. And I'll spend some time refining it. And hopefully later in the fall, I will open it up again and you can join us. So that's basically the only news I think I have. There's still one more workshop to come and you can still buy a ticket to that workshop a la carte. Originally, that workshop was going to be about reducing lifestyle inflammation, which is a topic that a lot of people have asked me to teach on in more depth. But as I have been creating this program and living different aspects of it, taking the medicine myself, learning the lessons again, going through my own process with it, my intention was to make the last workshop about lifestyle inflammation, but life doesn't always happen the way we intend. And it's taken a different direction for the last workshop. I'm going to be talking not about lifestyle inflammation, although that topic will come up, but I'm going to be talking about being on a hamster wheel of healing, not necessarily on a hamster wheel of wellness, but the healing journey, the healing the nervous system, healing the complex PTSD, healing the trauma responses, and how we can get on a hamster wheel with that too, and that there is beauty in acceptance and surrender and letting go. And that's the medicine that I've been taking for the past few weeks. I've been working on a pattern of relationship anxiety, not just specifically about my marriage relationship, but about my two closest relationships, which are with my husband, David, and with my best friend, who has been on this podcast in the past. I can link to those two episodes if you want to hear me and my best friend riff about all kinds of things. But those are my two closest relationships. Those are my attachment relationships that matter the most to me as an adult. And I haven't done a lot of reading of Gabor Mate's work. I only recently started following him on Instagram. I have never read a single one of his books, and I've only seen him in one documentary. I believe it was the Heal documentary. Or it was a documentary that he did about trauma. Yeah, it wasn't the Heal documentary. It was another one I can't think of the name of. But I decided to look him up on YouTube and watch some of his shorter clips on YouTube. And I came across a clip where he was talking about how we as children don't really have a choice in that we have to choose attachment with our parents and caregivers. And that takes the place of our authenticity because we need that attachment to parents to survive. And so I've been exploring that in my own self. And one of the patterns that I have is I have this massive trigger of abandonment. And it comes from being emotionally abandoned and physically abandoned as a child, specifically by my mother, who I love dearly. Like, I don't hate my mother. I recognize that she was also doing the best she could with what she had. And she was single and single parenting and working full-time on top of that, a very high-demand job. She was under-resourced. She wasn't supported. She didn't have a support system. She didn't have co-regulation. She didn't have supportive parents. Like, I hold space for all of that. And at the same time, I still have very, very real abandonment trauma from my early years with my mother. And the way that that has shown up in my adult relationships is that in the moment, I seem to not be able to find my voice when I'm starting to feel like my boundaries have been crossed, or like I need to say something, or I need to stick up for myself, or I need to set a boundary even. I feel so sensitive about other people's energy, and I can sense it so acutely. And sometimes I don't know where my anxiety and my feelings stop and theirs start. Like sometimes those lines are very, very blurry for me, and that's still something I'm figuring out. I don't like using the label of empath because I'm not trying to like shirk any personal responsibility about my own energetic boundaries by using the term empath, but I am empathic. Anyway, what that looks like in relationships is that in real time, if I feel anxious or like I need to set a boundary or stick up for myself or hold a boundary or whatever, I'm at the point now where it's like I sort of dissociate from my body in the moment, but it's almost like my higher self dissociates because there's still this very loving voice that's like, you need to say something, speak up for yourself, set the boundary, Lindsay. Say something, Lindsay, and the words just won't come. I just feel stuck in my throat, and my face and my neck get really red, and I get a knot in my throat, and I feel really sick in my stomach. And then I leave, or I go to sleep, or it's the next day, or whatever, and I just feel this immense shame, like, oh, I did it again. I abandoned myself again. I didn't speak up for myself again. I wasn't authentic again. And I've been going around this mountain for about 9 or 10 months now that it has been apparent that this is a huge pattern in my life. And I have openly talked with my husband and my best friend about this. I have shared with them what it feels like for me, what it looks like for me. My best friend and I have even come up with a safe word so that if I don't feel like I can access my words in that moment, I can use the safe word. Like, we've done all the things, okay? We've done this very well and in a very functional way. And yet the pattern is still there. And so right now I'm sitting in the very interesting space of, what if this is not something about myself that I can fix? Am I on a hamster wheel trying to fix this thing about myself? I don't know. I'm literally asking myself that question right now. I don't know if I'm on a hamster wheel trying to fix it. I know that when I am not authentic, when I don't speak up for myself, when I don't hold my boundaries, when I don't participate in communication in a super authentic way, I know that that doesn't feel good for me, and I don't want to repeat that. If for no other reason, then it doesn't feel good for me. But I also love these people so much that I don't want to create drama unnecessarily. I don't want to create conflict unnecessarily just because I can't figure out how to speak up for myself and find my words in the moment. And instead of and what I'm afraid of in terms of attachment, and this is the childhood part, right, is that I don't need attachment for my survival now, because I am capable of providing for myself, and I was not capable of providing for myself when I was a child. So I don't need the attachment now. What I need now that I didn't get to have as a child is my authenticity. And my authenticity is that however I feel is real, and my voice matters, and it's okay to use my voice, and it's okay for me to have my own experience and to interpret that through my own lenses. That's authenticity. It's okay for me to express myself in ways that feel right for me. That's authenticity. If I'm not expressing myself because I'm self-abandoning to avoid being abandoned by the other person, then I'm not being authentic. So it really sort of feels like this struggle to stay in my own authenticity in real life relationships, which are the ones that matter the most to me. It's not hard for me to be authentic on the internet. It's not hard at all for me to be authentic on the internet. Why? Because I don't have an attachment relationship with people on the internet or with the internet itself or with my followers on Instagram. I literally couldn't give two shits what they think about me, what they say about me, if they follow, if they unfollow. I really, really, really and truly don't care. But when it comes to David and my best friend, I care. I care what they think of me. I care what their opinion is of me. I care what they have to say. And I care and love them enough that they deserve my authenticity just as much as I deserve to be authentic, and vice versa. I deserve their authenticity and they deserve to be authentic. So I'm sitting in this space of like, okay, I don't need this attachment, but for some reason, everything in my body is still telling me that I have to choose attachment over authenticity. And so I abandon myself to avoid being abandoned. And I'm only just now sitting in the very new space of like, is this something I can actually fully heal? I don't know. This is the first time I've ever asked myself that question. I've literally never even allowed the idea that I might not be able to fix this enter my orbit, enter my mind. I've literally never allowed that thought in. It's only been about 3 or 4 days that I've been sitting with this, like, what if I can't fix this? What if it's a scar? Like, scars leave scar tissue. We have to figure out how to adapt and move around scar tissue. We have to compensate sometimes. Like, I have emotional scars from emotional abandonment from my mother. They get triggered. Not as often as they used to, but they still get triggered. So although the last workshop in the Feel Without Fear series was supposed to be about reducing lifestyle inflammation, it's taking a different direction. And it's letting me know that, like, right now, this is what's fresh for me. And this is what feels alive for me. And this is what I want to talk to the world about. I can talk to the world about lifestyle inflammation in another workshop. I don't have to do it as part of the Feel Without Fear series. And it feels more relevant to feeling without fear to be able to talk about accepting the things about ourselves that we keep working at and keep striving and keep struggling and keep fighting and keep trying to fix, and coming to a place of, I can still take responsibility for myself, but I also have to accept that this is like a thing that I deal with, and I'm not sure if I can totally fix it. And can that be okay? And can I find safety and acceptance and belonging in relationships anyway? Can all of the complexity exist? I believe the answer is yes, but I'm still living it right now and figuring that out. So on September 13th, I am going to teach the final workshop in the Feel Without Fear series. And you can still get the entire series. You won't be able to go through it with us live, but you will be able to watch the replays of all of the workshops so far and all of the group calls. So I'll tell you what the workshops have been about so far, because it really is a progression that takes you on an intentional journey. And really, it's the journey that I'm taking you on. It's my healing journey that I'm taking you on and how to apply it to you. So the first workshop I taught was called Wake Up. And it was all about awareness, the importance of awareness, curiosity, judgment, keeping us stuck, awareness. So number one was called Wake Up. Number two was called Untriggered. And it was all about our triggers and noticing our triggers and how we're making other people responsible for our triggers and avoidance of triggers, feeling triggers without fear. The third workshop was about overcoming health anxiety. That's a big trigger for a lot of people. It was worth it to me to teach an entire 3-hour workshop on health anxiety. The fourth workshop was called Expand. It was about widening your window of tolerance and being able to hold more, and not only more stress, but also more joy and more risk and more pleasure. There was also a lot about pleasure in the health anxiety workshop. There's been a big focus on pleasure in this entire series. And then, of course, last night was the fifth workshop, and it was called Resilient, and it was about personal responsibility, agency, and boundaries. So it really is a progression of my own healing journey that I'm taking you on. So it's deeply personal to me, and it's been deeply, deeply, deeply impactful. I've had so much amazing feedback, and we're not even done yet. We're literally not even done yet, and I've already had so much great feedback. So I wanted to share some feedback from one of the students who has been to every workshop and every group call so far. And here's what she said. She sent me a DM on Instagram. She said, "Hi, I wanted to let you know how great it is to be part of the Feel Without Fear series. Last night's workshop was really incredible, as was the first one. I thoroughly enjoyed your wealth of information and the kindness in the group. It is so nice to learn from someone who has not left a stone unturned. I don't have to hunt for information, knowing that we can cover everything and anything during the workshop and coaching calls with you. It is so apparent in every single thing you teach and share that you just get it. No matter what we discussed, you had awareness and insights for us all to explore. So grateful to have found you and now be working with you and the group. You are an incredible teacher with just an endless amount of information, knowledge, insight, and heart. I love that you lead with your heart and intuition. It was so much fun too. I loved laughing and feeling with everyone. Really powerful experience. I look forward to all of the upcoming workshops. So that's just from one student in the Feel Without Fear series. So if you would like to attend
the final workshop, which you are welcome to come to as an a la carte experience, that is going to be on Wednesday, September 13th. It's going to be about, I don't really even know yet, surrendering, acceptance, scars. I don't know. I trust that you'll feel the energy of it and know if it's for you or not. But that's happening on Wednesday, September 13th at 6 on Zoom. Tickets are $77. If you would like to come in and do the entire Feel Without Fear experience, then you could literally go through all of it in a matter of a week if you wanted to. It'd be a really intense week, but you could. So for a limited time, as long as I'm still doing the live stuff, the live workshops and the live calls, you can still buy the entire series, even if you just buy it as a replay. As soon as I'm finished, though, which is going to be on September 19th, is when we're fully done, then the ability to retroactively purchase individual workshops or the entire experience is going to go away. And at some point this fall, I will reopen it to a new cohort. So if you don't want to go through it live, if you want to just go through the experience on your own and watch the replays of the workshops and the group calls, you can do that. You can sign up or get your replays at lindsaylockett.com/feel. And if you want to get just a ticket to the final workshop, which is still TBD, you can find that information on my website as well, lindsaylockett.com. Of course, I'll have links to all that in the show notes below, so you don't actually have to remember those URLs. So now let's get into the topic of today's podcast, episode number 100. We're just going to do a Q&A. I've taken some of the juicy questions that I've received recently, and I'm going to answer them on here. So here we go. We'll see how many questions we can answer in a reasonable amount of time, because I don't want this episode to be 2 hours long. So, all right, first question. What is the best way to deal with frustration and rage? Really, really, really good question. Love this question because in addition to working on self-abandonment this year, I've also been working on my relationship to anger and seeing all the little unconscious ways that I have suppressed and repressed my anger, because I didn't want to be, air quotes, like that. That's a judgment that I find a lot of people have, especially if they grow up in homes where there was a lot of yelling or where there was abuse or violence, or they never saw healthy conflict, is that there is this judgment that if I am angry and if I express my anger, then I am bad like they were, like my parents were. And I don't want to be bad like my parents. So then they do the opposite, which is I don't allow my anger and frustration to be expressed at all. However, as we know, emotion is energy in motion, and energy doesn't disappear. It just changes forms. And so when we continuously suppress and repress our anger, it doesn't just magically dissolve and disappear, although we may not feel like we still feel angry. But it gets tucked and stored in our bodies, and eventually it becomes depression. Depression is literally suppressed and repressed anger, literally what it is. It's a chronic immobilization response because anger was not allowed to be used in service of getting you back to safety. And when we don't allow our fight-flight response in service of getting us back to safety, the nervous system determines, well, fight-flight didn't work. And there's only one other option after fight, flight, not working, and that is immobilization, which looks like freeze, and that looks like collapse. So the best way to deal with frustration and anger is literally to feel it, to allow it to flow through you, to consciously embody it. What I mean by consciously embody it is not being reactive, it's not yelling, it's not being violent, it's not throwing things, unless you go off by yourself and you are in a safe space where you're not going to hurt self and you're not going to hurt anyone else. And then you embody it by literally becoming anger. You growl, you stomp your feet, you kick and scream and throw a fit, you yell, you push something, you break something, you throw something. You're doing it in a conscious way and you're allowing that energy of anger to move. You scream into a pillow, you hit a pillow, whatever it is that you need to do. You consciously embody it. And then eventually you start learning through practice. When you feel anger, it's like a wave that a surfer catches and then they stand up on their surfboard and they ride the wave. Anger is literally like that. After you allow yourself to feel anger, maybe it's the first time you felt anger ever or in a really, really, really long time because you've been afraid of it, because you've had judgments about it. So once that anger wave comes up, you have to learn how to catch it and ride the wave. And when you learn how to catch it and ride the wave, then you're able to channel the energy of anger. And instead of being violent or instead of being yelling at your kids or being abusive or being passive aggressive or being something like that, which is an unconscious response, which perpetuates trauma, you learn to channel that energy of anger towards setting boundaries and asserting yourself and standing up for yourself and taking action on what you need to take action on, because the energy of anger is a movement energy. The mobilization of our nervous systems in sympathetic fight flight is to move us, either move us toward the threat to fight against it or to move us away from the threat as we run away from it. Repressing it, which is unconsciously pushing it down because you don't want to feel it, will only lead to nervous system collapse, immobilization. And it will lead you to be disconnected from yourself. Whatever parts of yourself, like an anger part that you won't accept or can't handle or don't want to face or you avoid, is creating fragmentation and disconnection from your own self, because you're essentially saying to that part, you are not acceptable to me. You are not allowed here. There is not space for you. And that may sound like a lot of the messages that you received as a child. So repressing anger is going to create more of that, whereas learning to stop repressing your anger, express it consciously in a way that doesn't hurt self or others, and ride those waves so that the energy of anger can be used for conscious purposes, setting boundaries, asserting yourself, getting things done, leadership, courage, drive, motivation. That's the stuff that anger energy can help you accomplish. On its own, anger is just a neutral energy. It's what we do with that energy when it comes into our bodies that makes it harmful or not harmful. It's also necessary to feel anger, and it's necessary to even be able to feel anger about past things where you repressed anger. I have several videos on Instagram of doing something called imagined reprocessing, where I am playing a movie in my imagination of a thing or a person or an event that made me really angry or that I feel anger about now, but I wasn't allowed to use my anger in the moment to protect myself or set a boundary or assert myself. And so I've been doing anger work of going back and replaying those memories and actually completing the action of pushing or hitting or stomping my feet or saying no or whatever I needed to do to close some of those trauma loops. And that's work that I do with my one-on-one clients. I've never done that in a group setting. But anyway, that is how I would say are the best ways to deal with anger and rage, is literally to feel it, embody it, start getting familiar with what the energy of anger feels like, what your reactions are when you feel anger, and if you can start to channel that energy into things that are actually going to be more productive for you, like setting boundaries and holding boundaries and asserting yourself, speaking up for yourself. So hopefully that's helpful for those of you who have a really funky relationship with your own anger. The next question I have, I thought was a really interesting one, and that's why I'm including it here. It's pretty unique to me. Is falling in love good for a severely dysregulated nervous system? So I think this is a tough one to answer. I want to say yes. Right? There's like an audio on Instagram that's like, I want to say yes. I want to say yes. I want to say yes. Right? So I want to say that yes, falling in love is good. Like, of course, who doesn't love the feeling of falling in love, right? However, if you are falling in love with a severely dysregulated nervous system, then is, air quotes, falling in love actually this high cortisol, high adrenaline feeling of anxious attachment, right? Like sometimes that new relationship energy that feels so addicting and so good is actually like that anxious attachment where it's like, ooh, like I have a lot of stress hormones going through my body because this is new and some of it feels good, but I also don't know where we stand and I haven't known you long enough for us to have a secure attachment and we haven't been through conflict together. So I'm not sure if I can trust you, but boy, the sex is really good. So, blah, right? Like that sounds like anxious attachment. And I think a lot of the feeling that people associate with falling in love is that high stress hormone state of anxious attachment. When it's not met with awareness, this feeling of anxiety about a relationship, especially if your nervous system is dysregulated, when it's not met with awareness, then we can repeat those same relationship patterns, but in different relationships. So sometimes relationships, when a person, you know, when the feeling of the new relationship energy is gone and they sort of settle into more of a routine or more comfortable with each other, whatever, like the honeymoon phase is over. And a lot of people only want that high adrenaline, high cortisol, you know, anxious new relationship energy. And that's what they associate with the relationship being good. And so then whenever that goes away and the relationship just becomes an ordinary, you know, boring sometimes place to be, then they're like, oh, we must not be compatible or this isn't working out for us anymore or whatever. And it's not because it's not working out. It's because they associate the highly stressed out stage in a relationship with being the best part of a relationship. And so whenever that's over, then it's like, well, our relationship must be over. And we can do this with friends too. I'm not even talking about romantic relationships, although this question in particular is about falling in love. But like, I have even done this with friends where it's like for the first 3, 4, 6 months of our relationship, there's this new relationship energy, right? And we want to hang out all the time and we're really getting to know each other and we're doing lots of things together and having great conversations and all that. And then life happens or we get busy or kids get sick or whatever happens. And then we don't spend as much time together. And if we don't continue nurturing that relationship and being intentional about how we spend time together, we will drift apart. The new relationship energy is what keeps us together at first, but nobody can sustain new relationship energy forever, even in a friendship. I would argue that you don't want to sustain new relationship energy, even in a friendship. My long-term relationships that are like a decade or older are the safest ones I have. And we don't have new relationship energy. I've been with my husband 22 years. We have not had new relationship energy for 21 years. but yet we've made it because our nervous systems settled into that. And I think that that's a really good thing. So if the relationship ends after the falling in love part ends because the attachment isn't secure or because there's still a lot of unconscious patterns, then I would say that falling in love is not good for a severely dysregulated nervous system because it means you're probably going to keep repeating those patterns. And you don't want to repeat those patterns because when you repeat the patterns, then the dysregulation only continues. I don't mean to be a downer about this either. Like I love love, okay? I really love love. But love to some people feels like the anxious chase of a lover or it feels like being chased by a lover because of your attachment style. So if you have an avoidant attachment style, you may really enjoy being chased by a lover. If you have an anxious attachment style, you may enjoy pursuing a lover or vice versa. If your nervous system is dysregulated, then it 100% skews your perspective of the relationship or of yourself or of the other person. So we're all looking through our own filters and our own lenses. And if my nervous system is in a really dysregulated state, that is going to change the filter through which I see the world and through which I experience other people and emotions, including love. And this answer is not at all saying that until you get your nervous system regulated, you don't have any business falling in love or dating or finding someone or being romantic. So that's not what I'm saying at all either. I'm just saying maybe you hadn't figured on how your attachment style and your stress hormones play into what a lot of people call that addictive new relationship energy. And that's often the time when we are falling in love, right? So can you fall in love and be dysregulated? Of course you can. Can it be real? Of course. Of course it is. I was probably really dysregulated when I was falling in love with David, and we're still together 22 years later. But just something to be aware of. Being aware of your nervous system, being aware of your attachment style and your patterns, and going into a relationship with that awareness. And also having the tools to be able to meet yourself and support yourself when you do get dysregulated, instead of making that the other person's problem or the other person's responsibility. So yeah, fall in love, just do it with awareness and not with tons of dysregulation. All right, our third question. Can a lack of confidence come from nervous system dysregulation? Also, will releasing trauma cure it? So I'll answer the first question first. Can a lack of confidence come from nervous system dysregulation? Absolutely. Absolutely. Your authentic self is confident. Your authentic self knows that it's okay for you to try things. It's also okay for you to fail. It's okay to be new at something, to be learning something new, to not be perfect at something when you try, to just do something for fun. All of that is okay. And your highest self energy knows that. But if the messages that you received as a child from parents, teachers, or other adults who were in authority sounded like, you just need to try harder, or you're so smart, how could you fail that test? Then that is going to take a blow to your confidence, right? Because your authentic self does try. Like, you do the best you can, especially as a kid, right? Or if you generally just felt like nothing you ever did was good enough, like, that's going to be a serious blow to your authenticity and also to your confidence. It's also a serious blow to your self-trust. And when you don't have self-trust, or your trust in yourself is not strong, that also fucks with your confidence in yourself. I think that confidence is self-trust. Confidence says, I trust that I can do this. I trust that I can try this. I trust that I can say this. I trust that I can feel this and be okay. It's really, really common in people with complex PTSD to feel that lack of self-trust and that lack of confidence. Sometimes it manifests as, like, literally being in, like, a perpetual freeze state where you want to try something new, you know you need to try something new, you desire to try something new, and then there's this other part of you that's like, but I can't because I don't trust that I can be okay. And there can be all kinds of excuses that we make up, like, I don't have the money, I don't have the time, I don't have this, I don't have that. But a lot of the time, the root of it is, I actually just don't trust that I can do this and be new or be a beginner and still be okay. So, of course, for, like, trauma and nervous system work helps, like this person asked, like, will releasing trauma cure it? I don't think that we need to use the word cure, because that to me implies that, like, a lack of self-confidence is pathological, and it's not pathological. It is a completely normal response to a person who was told or who got the message that the things they did and tried weren't good enough and that they weren't trying hard enough. It is a message of, you're not enough, right? In some way, you're not enough. So awareness is probably the biggest piece of this, is just having an awareness of, like, what does not trusting myself feel like? What does this lack of self-confidence feel like? And then what are my typical things that I do when I feel this way? And also, how long have I felt this way? How old is this feeling? If you do parts work at all, what part of me is it that doesn't trust myself? What part of me is it that doesn't feel confident? How old is that part? And why does that part feel that way, right? I love parts work for stuff like this. So having that awareness is going to be, like, the key part there. And then after that, it's literally a matter of like choosing consciously and widening your window of tolerance and trying things and proving to yourself, oh, I can try things and be okay. I can do something new and imperfectly and still be okay. And that is going to build your self-trust, but it requires you choosing those experiences over and over and over to desensitize yourself in a way, right? Like you're doing it over and over and over because you want to desensitize yourself to that trigger. You don't always want your window of tolerance to be so small. So gaining self-trust is a big part of the healing process. And so you have to put yourself in situations where you need to have trust in yourself and then choose to do it. And you might get it wrong. And then you have to choose that that can be okay. And that doesn't mean that you're like broken or beyond repair, or you're never going to have self-confidence, or it's just your personality, or it's the way you innately were born, or whatever. None of us are innately lacking in trust in ourselves. None of us innately lack confidence. Children who are not traumatized are the most confident people you have ever met. They believe they can do anything. When children are traumatized, they start losing that trust and that confidence in themselves. So a lack of self-confidence, a lack of self-trust is literally a trauma response. You probably have complex PTSD. I highly recommend the book Complex PTSD, From Surviving to Thriving by Pete Walker. I will link it in the show notes below. It is absolutely my favorite book. It's like my Bible. It sits on my desk all the time. I have it dog-eared and underlined and bookmarked and notes in the margin and everything else. It's my favorite book ever. And he actually talks about like self-trust and confidence in the book. So highly recommend that. I'll link it in the show notes. All right, we are moving right along here. Our fourth question: I'm struggling with apologizing even when I'm in the wrong. Any tips to move through ego? I love this question. First and foremost, because it takes a lot for someone to admit that they struggle with apologizing even when they're wrong. And they also recognize that it's ego. So I really do love this question. The first thing that comes up for me with this question is my guess is that healthy repair and healthy apologizing were not modeled to you. And so you have an inner child part that feels shame in admitting mistakes or in even making mistakes. I would even guess it's more about you feel shame about making the mistake than you do about admitting that you make the mistake. So there's some part that feels an avoidance because of the shame that's there in making a mistake. And if it's a perfectionist part, for example, then a perfectionist feels really, really threatened at the thought of making a mistake because their identity and their worthiness come from being perfect, or at least trying to be perfect, right? So it's going to make a perfectionist part feel a lot of shame to be like, hey, I wasn't perfect and that hurt you and I'm sorry. Like that's going to be really hard, not because the apology itself is hard, but because admitting that you weren't perfect or that you made a mistake is hard. So I would recommend that you do some work around that with that part, whatever that kid is on your bus. That's an analogy I like to use a lot. It sounds like you've got a kid on your bus who's like trying to drive the bus, but doesn't know where they're going and doesn't know how to get there and doesn't know what to do if the bus breaks down. And so even when you know you're in the wrong, that kid is still like, nope, we're not apologizing because that means we acknowledge that we are not perfect and we cannot do that. That is threatening. It's just a protective part, right? It's just a protective part. It's trying to protect you from feeling shame that you made a mistake, or feeling shame that someone else needs an apology from you and needs repair. And also, if it wasn't modeled to you how to healthy repair, then of course you're not going to know that, right? And if you bring some awareness to this and neutrality, I think anyone can see that, yes, this part is trying to protect me from the shame that I might feel if I make a mistake, but it doesn't make that much sense and it's not serving you very well in your real life and in your relationships. And I might even guess, like this is maybe reaching here, but I'm going to say it anyway, that this same part of you may also feel guilt or shame when someone apologizes to you. Sit with that maybe. If you have a hard time apologizing and admitting when you're wrong, like how do you feel or how do you receive it when other people admit their wrongs to you and their mistakes to you? How do you feel when someone apologizes and repairs with you? Is that really difficult and uncomfortable for you? I would guess it probably is, because everything is a mirror. So it's a really great question. I hope that was a good answer. Okay, here's another question that I really love, and it might get a little squirmy. What are your thoughts on the Healy? So have you heard of the Healy? Like, do you know what the Healy is? It's a frequency device. I'm really annoyed by it because I've tried to look into it and their website is so vague that I have a really hard time like figuring out what it's actually supposed to do. But from what I can gather, based on very limited vague information, is that it is a device that you wear on your body or you put in your pocket or something, and it emits a frequency that is supposed to be whatever frequency you need at that time. I do believe in frequency. Everything is frequency. Everything is frequency. Everything is a wavelength. Light, sound, energy, it's all frequency. So I don't have a problem with a frequency device at all. I've never used a Healy. I've never played with one or touched one. I've seen them online. I've tried to read about them. I've asked some people who have them questions. They are so damn expensive, like so damn expensive, like a couple thousand dollars expensive. And that's a lot of money for people. Maybe I will try it one day. I don't know. I don't really feel called to it. I do have a problem with devices that claim to be like the fix-all for everything, because fixing ourselves does not ever lie in just one thing. And I'm never, ever going to base like my healing success on a gadget that most folks can't afford. Like, I'm not going to be like, oh my God, the Healy, it heals everything that's ever wrong with me and I have no symptoms and blah, 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 blah. But you need to pay $3,000 to be able to get it, because most of the people who follow me and who are in my orbit are not going to be able to afford something like that. And so then that just creates like helplessness and hopelessness, right? That fuels the hopelessness that underprivileged and underserved folks already feel. I'm sure it's a hell of a device. I'm sure it is. And like psychedelics, for example, the Healy could be a helpful tool in a toolbox of many tools. I'm all for that. But I really do not believe that the Healy or any other device, heart math, the things that you, the little whistles that you blow into, the headphones you put in your ear for noise sensitivity, like all these devices that they're selling, right? Like fucking mattresses that emit frequencies, like all that kind of shit. Like, sure, I'm sure they're cool. I'm sure they're really cool. They're great for privileged people who can afford those types of things. The majority of people do not have extra money to be spending on mattresses that emit frequencies and, you know, frequency devices that you wear in your pocket for $3,000. So like psychedelics, I think that the Healy and all these other devices can be a helpful tool in a toolbox of many tools. And I do not believe that having a Healy or having any other device is going to be the thing that makes or breaks your process. I just don't. I don't put a lot of stock in advice in devices. And you know, I also think about like our ancestors, like they didn't have access to all of these devices. And that doesn't mean that they didn't experience anxiety or depression or trauma or anything like that. Of course they did. But what our ancestors have that we often do not have is community. And I'm not talking about ancestors like your parents and grandparents. I'm talking about like our ancestors for the majority of our existence as a species lived in community. And so people were sharing the weight of responsibilities. People were sharing in the raising of children, in hunting and gathering food, in storing food for winter, in making clothing. Like, we didn't always live in these like very separate nuclear families where every single family had their own house. For the majority of our existence as a species, we lived very communally. We lived multi-generationally, all together under the same roof, or multiple families all together under the same roof, tribes in close proximity to each other. And so there were ways of helping people cope because there were many hands that made the work lighter for everyone else. And so I think that a lot of the relief that these healing devices promise could actually really be solved for free if we had close-knit tribes, clans, communities. So that's how I feel about the Healy and other healing devices besides the Healy. All right, next question. How do you recognize negative patterns within yourself, and what is the first step to heal them? Great question. My answer probably will not surprise you. Awareness is my answer. So if you're totally clueless to your patterns, maybe you're just starting to learn about this, just starting to practice awareness. So you're kind of dipping your toe in the water and you're like, okay, I've got some shit I need to heal, but I don't know how to figure out what I need to heal and how to actually heal it. So awareness is your first step. So if you're totally clueless to your patterns, if you've never practiced awareness before, ask a few trusted people to give you some honest feedback. Be really careful in who you choose. You got to choose safe, trusted people. This is the importance of community. If their feedback resonates with you, even if it stings, okay, sometimes we think resonance means it doesn't sting or it doesn't feel icky. If you have no reaction whatsoever, if you feel nothing, then it doesn't resonate. But if it elicits or evokes a response in you, if you feel angry at their feedback or you feel like their feedback is unfair or whatever. And again, you're going to have to use your discernment on this, right? Because sometimes it's difficult to tell, especially for people with complex trauma. But if their feedback stings, then it probably resonates, especially if they're giving it to you in a loving, caring way. So even if it stings, have the intention with yourself to start noticing that pattern more often. You can even ask those same trusted people to kind of give you a gentle reminder if you're repeating the pattern and you're really, really unaware of it. That can be really helpful. My best friend and I do this. And it really takes a willingness to hear other people's feedback and know that it's not a criticism or a rejection of you. That it can be like, hey, you do this thing and it bothers me. Like, how do you feel about it, right? Like, it can be that. It can be safe. It can be trusted. It doesn't have to be something that we get offended by. If you have a really big reaction, though, to the feedback that you ask for from someone else, that's probably an indicator that there's something there. There's some work that could be done there. I also have to speak to, like, sometimes other people's feedback is more about them and not quite so much about us. Sometimes other people's feedback is like they're in their own triggers and their own dysregulation. And so their feedback is a way to soothe that in themselves to keep from being triggered. So this is a really complex thing and there's a lot of nuance to it and we have to hold that complexity. So for ourselves, if we receive feedback from someone else and it's coming from a safe and trusted person, and we know that this person is invested in us and in the relationship and is committed to us and to the relationship, then we have a responsibility to ourselves to sit with their feedback and notice if we have resistance to it. And if we have resistance to it, then I think there's a couple of questions to ask ourselves at that point. And that would be around the nature of the resistance. Is it intuitive resistance or is it fear-based resistance? So intuitive resistance is like you just know something isn't for you. Like it doesn't really resonate. There's no strong reaction one way or another. You feel mostly neutral about it. But there's just something that's like, nah, it's not for me. That's intuitive resistance. Fear-based resistance, on the other hand, is that resistance that we feel often whenever we're about to have a breakthrough or we're about to see something that we haven't seen before about ourselves or we're about to shift a pattern and there is an ego part, maybe a protective part that's worried about this that kind of comes in and creates all these stories about it and has all of these objections to it. If you have a lot of objections to the feedback that you're getting from trusted people, that's a pretty good indicator that that's some like fear-based resistance, and there probably is actually something there for you. If you don't have strong objections and you're just like, well, I mean, that's how you feel, but like that doesn't resonate with me at all, or like I don't feel that way, or I see it differently, or whatever, like you're allowed to have that difference. So hold the complexity. Also in fear-based resistance, the ego has an attachment to the feedback, or an attachment to the person who's giving the feedback being wrong. So if there is some sort of attachment to like, you really want that person to be wrong in what they're saying, that's another indicator that you might be in some egoic resistance. And what they're telling you is mirroring something back to you that you're not ready to look at yet. And if I can't get to a truth on my own about myself, I'm getting a lot better and more adept at that, but I still rely on the feedback from people I love and trust. So if I can't get to that truth on my own, or if I'm still really struggling with something and I keep repeating a pattern, then I take the feedback that I've received, like if it's feedback from my partner, I'll take it to my best friend and be like, what do you think about what David said? Or if it's feedback from my best friend, I'll take it to David and be like, well, Honor said this about me. What do you think about that? And if they both are saying similar things where they're like, yeah, that's a thing that you do, then that's definitely something for me to look at. So there's another reason why we need community, right? Like we're not supposed to heal in a solo vacuum. It's not just supposed to be like me in a room, in a hole, figuring out my shit. And one day I magically emerge from that hole and suddenly my nervous system is super regulated and everything is falling into place and I've healed my patterns and I don't have complex PTSD anymore and I don't have symptoms anymore. That's not realistic. And so that's why we need community. Because there is never, in safe, trusted community, there's never an expectation that a person doesn't belong until they've had their shit figured out. We may have that story in our own heads of like, oh, I can't be involved in that until I get my shit figured out, or I can't take on any more intimate relationships or get involved in community because I don't have my shit figured out yet. And what are they going to think of me? And what if I mess up? And what if I embarrass myself? And what if I feel shame? And what if I repeat this pattern in this relationship? Like, it's normal to have those fears, but there's no such thing as like getting all your shit figured out and then finding community. Because if you somehow magically attain getting your shit figured out and then going out and finding community, you're going to be insanely disappointed because the community you find is not going to have their shit figured out. Okay. Yeah, that's what I want to say about community. I have a lot to say about community today. It's so, so important. If the healing work we're doing on ourselves is only about us and it's self-centered, then we're missing the boat. We are not doing all of this healing work on ourselves for ourselves. We are also doing it because we have to be in relationships with other people. We don't have to be in romantic relationships with other people, but we need connection and community with people. And so when you have that in safety and in reciprocity, then the relationship becomes this like beautiful container where you are each working out your own stuff. And when the person shares feedback, it's usually because they're invested in the health of the relationship and because they love you. Like, I know when my friend gives me feedback, even if it's critical feedback, I know that it's not coming from a place of her selfishness or her needing to exert some sort of superiority over me or her needing me to be wrong or for her to have the upper hand or whatever. Like, I know when she gives me constructive feedback about myself, it's coming from a place of love. It's coming from a place of wanting what's best for the relationship. So those are the kinds of relationships I'm talking about. You don't have to take feedback and discern if it's for you or not, if it's coming from a stranger on the internet or if it's coming from an unsafe person, if it's coming from like a parent that you have a really rocky relationship with and their feedback is just more repetition of the trauma that they put on you as a child. You are allowed to reject their feedback. So lots of complexity about who to ask for feedback and how to discern if it's for you. But the original question is, how do you recognize negative patterns within you? So one step is, if you're totally clueless, ask other people, people you love and trust, not people you have trauma bonds with, not people you have insecure attachment with. But you're also capable of noticing these patterns on your own, and you can do that through a practice of awareness. So what purpose does it serve for me to do XYZ? Isn't it interesting that I do XYZ? I noticed that I felt such and such a way when this person said this thing. Isn't that interesting? I wonder why I felt that way. Like, starting to just acutely notice yourself and having some self-awareness will reveal and solve a lot of our puzzles. The other thing I want to say is that you're going to repeat the pattern. So whatever the negative pattern is, you're going to repeat that pattern. Even if you have the full intention of being in awareness, being in your body, being grounded, like all of that, you are still going to repeat that pattern. And that is totally normal. You may not even come into awareness that you've repeated a pattern until you've after you've already repeated it. Then you're like, oh shit, I did the thing again. Okay, that is normal. And there's gonna be a voice in your head. There's gonna be a little kid on your bus who's like wanting to shame you for that, or wanting to be really hard on you for that, or beat yourself up for that. If you fall into that shaming, beating myself up story, you're going to collapse and you're not gonna have the mobilization and motivation that you need to continue to be in awareness of this pattern and begin to shift it. So even if the pattern affects other people, whether it's the feedback you get from them or feedback from yourself just through your own awareness, don't have some sort of expectation that just because I'm aware of this thing doesn't mean I'm never going to do it again. And then when you do it again, don't beat yourself up for it. Remind yourself that it's normal and keep practicing. And eventually, the way that I have experienced that awareness works is that we have an intention to become aware of a thing, or we're told by someone else, hey, here's something for you to be aware of. And then we repeat the pattern, usually multiple times. And only afterwards are we like, oh, I did the thing. Okay, I did the thing. And then eventually with practice, you'll be in the middle of repeating the pattern and you'll be in awareness like, oh, I'm doing it right now. I'm doing it right now. Okay. And then eventually you're going to figure it out before you repeat the pattern. You'll get really, really, really aware of, this is how I feel in my body before I repeat this pattern. These are the thoughts that go through my head before I repeat this pattern. This is the person I'm with when I usually repeat this pattern. Like, and then you'll eventually get to the point where you don't repeat the pattern because you're in awareness of it before it happens. But that reverse engineering is part of it. And breaking patterns takes time because we're not just dealing with like a personality. We're not dealing with like a decision that you're making. We're dealing with deep neural pathways in your brain that have to be rewired. And your brain is capable of rewiring itself because it's neuroplastic. So there's so much hope, but there also has to be a willingness to be aware. And where you can't be aware, that's where we rely on people we love and trust and who love and trust us to show us our blind spots, because we're all blind to different parts of ourselves and the ways that those things show up in relationships and affect other people. So we have a responsibility to ourselves and to the people we love to be in awareness of that. And when we're not in awareness, we have a responsibility to listen to feedback. You're always welcome to reject feedback. But if you're rejecting feedback from someone who's giving it to you in a really loving, caring, supportive kind of way, your rejection of their feedback may be a red flag that there's an ego story or an attachment to them being wrong, or you wanting to stay the same and not wanting to shift or something like that. So really complex answer to a really great question. I hope I answered it in a clear way. And this will be the last question for episode number 100. And it's very pertinent to my Feel Without Fear workshop series, group coaching series. And the question is, how do you know when it's re-traumatizing you or when you're just feeling it to heal it? So your own feelings are not going to traumatize you. Your own feelings, even as extreme, as hyper-aroused or hypo-aroused, as big as they might be, are not trauma. They are just your feelings. And if they were trauma, your body wouldn't have them because your body doesn't traumatize itself. Your feelings cannot harm you. even when they feel really intense. Even intense anxiety itself cannot harm you. The feeling or the sensation cannot harm you. Your avoidance of your feelings, whether that's through willfully suppressing them or unconsciously repressing them, and your judgment of your feelings is much more harmful to yourself than actually allowing your feelings and feeling them. Now, if you're working with a practitioner and you're feeling some really intense feelings and they become too uncomfortable for you or too much, and the practitioner is like, just keep feeling it, it's fine, like that could be a potential re-traumatizing situation. A skilled practitioner is going to know how to walk the very, very fine line between you setting a boundary and saying, I'm done feeling this, I don't want to feel this anymore today, and you being in resistance where they can just gently challenge that. Okay, it takes a really, really skilled practitioner to be able to do that. And I have not met many who can do that. So being pushed to feel your feelings when you really don't want to, when they're really overwhelming, when you're feeling unsafe, when you're not in a safe environment or in a space where you feel comfortable, that can be re-traumatizing. But if it's just you on your own feeling your own feelings are not going to traumatize you. People never believe me about this until they experience it for themselves. People have so many stories caught up and wrapped up in their own feelings. Stories like, I can't let myself feel anger because if I do, then I am a bad, abusive person. Stories like, if I let myself feel the depth of my grief and I got all the way to the bottom of it, I would never come out of it and I would drown in a pool of grief. So there's lots of avoidance. Avoiding a feeling doesn't make it go away, right? And people never believe me about this until they experience it for themselves. But the feeling that you're avoiding is not as scary as you think it is. And usually feelings, if we are fully present with them and we feel them without fear, without stories, without judgment, they're usually pretty quick and they just pass through our bodies in a matter of a few seconds to a few minutes. Now, a difference in that would be something like chronic anxiety or chronic depression, that those feelings that like don't quickly pass through and they don't go away naturally whenever you feel them, they kind of stick around or they even get worse whenever you feel them. That's not what I'm talking about here. If you have chronic feelings of anxiety or of depression or even grief, like that may be something that you need help with. Like it may be that you're stuck in that place and you don't have the resources within yourself to get unstuck from that place. But if it's a moment of anger and you are working on anger, for example, I'm just using anger as an example here. Like let's say I'm not chronically angry. I've processed a lot of anger and a lot of rage out of my body, but I still get angry sometimes. Feeling my own anger is not going to traumatize me. It's definitely not going to traumatize me or anyone else if I feel it with awareness. If I meet that anger with awareness, I will not choose to yell at someone. I will not choose to hit someone or to break something or throw something. That is an unconscious reaction. When I meet that anger with awareness, this is what I was talking about at the beginning of the episode. It's about like I learned to ride it like a wave. I'm still feeling it, but it's not overtaking me. It's not consuming me. It's not throwing me into some unconscious, violent, rageful state. I learned to channel it. That's not going to traumatize me, and it's not going to traumatize anybody else. But people don't believe me about this until they actually experience it for themselves. And I've had so many clients and students who, when I sit with them and co-regulate and guide them through feeling a feeling, they're amazed at how quickly it resolves or it reduces. It works every fucking time, every time. And I do somatic tracking a lot with clients and I tell them very explicitly, we are not doing this to get rid of your feelings. We are not doing this to make your feeling go away. We're not doing it to fix anything. We're literally just being present with what's happening. But 100% of the time, the presence with what's happening, the actual feeling it, reduces or totally resolves the feeling. 100% of the time. I've never not had that work. Watch, I say that. No, it's going to happen. But yeah, avoiding your feelings is going to be more traumatizing to you and to others than just being present with your feelings and feeling them. And your own feelings cannot traumatize you, because they're coming from your own body, and your own body is not going to traumatize you. I don't even think that's biologically or physiologically possible for your own body to traumatize you in some way. And feelings are coming from your body. They're not coming from your mind. That's why you feel them in your tight throat, in the nausea in your stomach, in the tension in the back of your neck. That's why you feel them in your body. You don't feel feelings in your mind. So yeah. Well, I hope that you have enjoyed this Q&A episode number 100. If you've been a podcast listener from the beginning of the podcast and you're still here with me, I want to thank you so much for your support over these last 100 episodes. And thank you for being here on the ride. Thank you for being here through unprofessional episodes. Episodes that weren't edited properly. I think one time I actually forgot to edit out a bathroom break in an episode. This is why I need help, right? This is totally why I need help. But thank you so much for supporting the podcast through 100 wonderful but imperfect episodes. I really, really appreciate you being here and your support of my work. In the show notes below, I am going to link several things. I will link the Complex PTSD book that I mentioned. I'll also link those two podcast episodes with my best friend so you can hear what it's like for two people who are in a platonic, intimate relationship to communicate with each other in safety. I'm also going to link the Feel Without Fear program, and I'm going to link to the upcoming workshop that I'm hosting on September 13th. Now, I don't have a landing page yet for the September 13th workshop because I've decided to change it. So I'm going to link to the old landing page. It's going to be about lifestyle inflammation. But I want you to know that that's not what the workshop is going to be about completely. So I just want to be transparent about that because I'm putting this episode out before I have that put together. I'm taking a risk. I'm being with the part of me that says I have to have everything put together before I can talk about it. And I'm trusting that as an adult, you can figure out that by me telling you in this episode that the last workshop is not going to totally be about lifestyle inflammation, but you're welcome to come anyway. You can get your ticket for that. If you have any questions though about it, if it feels unclear, please do reach out to us, excuse me. You can always get somebody, if you email us is the best way, and you can email us at support@lindsaylockett.com. And again, that is with an EY and not an AY. Lindsay, not Lindsay. Anyway, thanks for being here for 100 magical episodes, and here's to 100 more. I'll talk to you soon.